Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Can we be there?
Ah, we are here. Oh, think of the time. Oh, you don't have to think about the time. It's right here. It's right now. My heart is still in my throat after watching the definition, and Earl Boykins called it this earlier today on the Mile High Hoops podcast, which will be posted shortly. Heart attack basketball.
That was fun basketball.
Oh, my God.
For, you know, 5-6 minutes of the fourth. Other than that, whew. It was heart attack basketball. That's largest, a good way to put it.
Largest playoff comeback in the history of the Nuggets. And I am lucky enough to say, and I speak for the both of us, that we get to say forever that we were there. And it was the environment in that fourth quarter was as live of a sporting event as I can remember being at in my life.
It was rocking for sure. The energy, the comeback. Look, I've been to some cool events. You know, I think of the, as a fan, I think of the AFC Championship game, Broncos, Patriots. That place was, holy cow, that building I thought was going to collapse. But that last 4 or 5 minutes was awesome. It was awesome. And the way they responded, the way they came back in a must-win game.
Must-win.
You know, Jamal Murray was missing for 3.5 quarters there. And then next thing you know, he just goes ballistic. Just a lot of really good storylines throughout that game to get them into that opportunity when they weren't playing very well. Young basketball team, moment might have been a little bit too big for them, but I think this game and that win could do wonders for that basketball team. Just take a deep breath. We can do it. Playoff basketball, it's not that much different than regular season ball. We got this. Whew, right? We can do this. We just got to do what we did late in the fourth quarter. We got to do it for a full game. And now we got to do it on the road at least one time. And I think they can.
Well, you know what? I hope so. My confidence level is not extremely high despite the comeback.
No.
Because, you know, trying to sort your feelings after watching a game like that, that was 48 minutes and for about 38 minutes, maybe 36 of them, you're just sort of shaking your head over and over and over. The combination of Will Barton and Jamal Murray for 90% of that basketball game was painful. Mike Malone has to bench Will Barton, period. Now, if you want to bring him off the bench, that's fine. But he's become an albatross in your lineup. He just...
Can't ignore it.
No, it's cement shoes and you're trying to swim. He was 1-for-10 in 26 minutes, finished with 3 points. It was just bad. Again, it's been bad. It is bad.
Mike Malone. It was super-duper bad.
It was super-duper bad.
Bad. Super-duper bad.
And look, in a playoff series of adjustments, it's step-up time, Mike Malone.
Right.
It's time to counterpunch.
You can't just say, well, we're going to give him another opportunity.
No.
You gave him an opportunity that whole game, for the most part. And once that ball went off the side of the backboard,
oh my God,
that was the final straw. And thank goodness, because that's when they really got things rolling, was with the other group.
That's
I didn't think Mike Malone should put Jamal Murray back in.
I felt the same way.
With like 4 or 5 minutes left, he put him back in. I'm like, oh, this other group right here is rolling good.
Right.
Like, they have an energy about them. They've got this thing back into a manageable situation. Jamal's just off today. He put him back in, so kudos for making that move, for putting Jamal back in, because obviously...
It turned out to be brilliant.
Yes.
You know, retroactively, you look at it and say, and Mike Malone's explanation after the game was awesome. It turned out to be the right call. But again, I don't know if I should call it the larger issue at play, but look, there's 10.5 minutes left in the second quarter, and you're down 19. I mean, like, again, heart attack basketball. And you got you're down 19 with 4.5 minutes left in the third, and they have these probability websites out there like 538 or whatever. I guarantee you the Nuggets had a 5% chance of winning that game at that point.
Not a lot for sure,
but Jamal Murray went historically nuclear. 21 points in the fourth quarter. It was magic. It was like watching how magic works. I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
It was special. It really was. And I'm hoping that that kind of propels him also into the next game. I'm hoping this win, you know, yeah, I hear you when you say you're still really concerned. And I don't think you can walk away from both those games and feel great about them. But I'm hoping that we look back and say, okay, the way they won that game, it did wonders for their confidence, knowing that they belong and they can do this, and they'll look like a much different team for four quarters than what they did for three and a half and the first game. So I'm hoping that that's what that last 7 minutes will do for them moving forward.
Yeah.
And for Jamal Murray.
Sure, personally.
You know, he has got to be that guy for this team, but he's got to be that guy more consistently.
You know what? To your point there, last night was actually a microcosm of who Jamal's been. He'll give you 30 one night and 8 the next. And it was him and his inconsistencies just compressed into a 48-minute game. But they found a way to get it done. But here's what I will say. I don't believe the Nuggets are the favorites in the series anymore. I don't. It just doesn't feel like that. My gut is telling me it doesn't feel like that. And if I said anything different into this microphone, it'd be a lie.
Yeah.
So
I mean, you're going on the road. Yeah, right?
You got to win there since 2012, Stoke.
Like, it's a long time.
It's not an Eastern opponent that you go one time a year.
I was still playing at a pretty high level in the NFL in 2012. That tells you how long ago it was.
Mm-hmm. I can't see it in the rear view. Can't see it. Gas was a different price. It was a different president, and you still had cleats on.
Wow.
So, again.
It's time to break that.
Sure.
And I think they will. I think they'll get home court back, and, you know, I think it's going to come down to game five, and they got to figure it out and
well,
figured out like they did last night.
I'll say this. Last night, I'm happy it happened. I'm thrilled it happened. I'm thrilled I was there. But last night's game is nothing for Nuggets fans to bang their chest about. It just doesn't feel like that.
They've been a little bit off here, you know, the last month, and they were a little bit off. I'm going to take the view of I'm just hoping that we look back at those last 7 minutes, and then after next game they say, hey, that last 7 minutes of game two was what has propelled us to, you know, win game three.
Sure, sure. And let me just say this because I want to get it off my chest. He's not getting enough credit. Paul Millsap putting 20-7 on the board last night. He was a plus 25 when he was on the floor. That's the highest of any player last night. Without his aggressive nature, and throw Gary Harris's 23 in there too.
Mm-hmm.
Without those two guys, Jamal Murray's heroics in the fourth get you a 9-point loss.
Right.
You know, without those guys, they were a life vest, a life preserver when the Nuggets were drowning and kept it at least reasonable. So Jamal's heroics and just going nuclear matters in the first place.
Yep. I got to give a shout out to my man Marsico, Neary, and one other person. I got hooked up with some great seats.
You didn't have great seats. Chris Fuselier had great seats.
When you
can squeak your shoes, when you can squeak your shoes on the hardwood,
it was cool.
Those are different seats.
It was
seats.
Cool. It
you
was
and your
cool.
boy down
yeah.
there, courtside.
My son got to meet Isaiah Thomas,
yes.
And he's loved the Bad Boys at 30 for 30, so that was really
and
cool.
And you have to clarify, you're talking about the Zeke Isaiah.
Right, yes.
Detroit Pistons, not
yes.
the
Bad Boys Isaiah.
Right, version one.
It was awesome to be right there. For that comeback was what a fun game.
I saw something yesterday. I got to tell you that it sort of made my day, and it has to do with Emmanuel Sanders. And I'll tell you what I saw next.
And running, running, and running, running, and in this context, there's no disrespect. So when I bust my rhyme, you break your neck. We got 5 minutes for us to disconnect.
Saw something yesterday that I just said, wow, that is extremely pleasant.
Running.
And it was Emmanuel Sanders on one of these, should I call it zero gravity treadmill?
Yeah, I think
something
that's
like
a
that.
Good way to put it. Yep.
Where the lower half of your body is in a bubble and it takes all of the pounding and pressure off of your joints and everything.
And I think they can adjust it because this was like a little bit towards the end of my career. I ended up doing it a few times, but I think they can adjust it to where you put different amounts of pressure on your lower body. right? So you can do it to where you're putting hardly any. You can do it where you put a little bit more. And it's really, really a cool piece of equipment.
For sure. And that's what he was on. And I got to tell you, I showed you before we went on the air, the way he was moving, just how many months after surgery? He got surgery in December.
Four.
So 4 months after going under the knife, he was moving so liberally.
There you go.
I wasn't expecting to see it. It surprised the hell out of me.
Yeah. Very. He looked great. Looked great. Change your mind at all? I mean, weren't you saying, was that you saying yesterday you think Courtland is the number one now?
Yes.
You watched the manual. I understand it's just in a, you know, one of those zero gravity treadmills. But if things keep going this way, I expect him, you know, if you're 4 months out, I expect him to be rolling by training camp. I'm sure they'll be cautious with him, but I just think he's going to just come out on fire like he did last year. And if he's healthy, he's the number one, not Courtland.
And you want to know what? Here's the thing. Like,
what'd you say yesterday? Did you say?
If Emmanuel comes back at 100%, Courtland Sutton and his God-given gifts and his catch radius and his stature and his athleticism, I think he's the number one. For that guy to walk in the league and put up over 700 receiving yards and four touchdowns from the jump with Case Keenum, I just, like, that's what my gut is telling me. You always say this. You say things change fast in the NFL. Well, sometimes roles change just as fast in that league. And it is a new day. And I think Courtland Sutton, think about him for your fantasy league. I mean, I think he's going to be that dynamic.
Oh, yeah, I would think about him for fantasy league for sure. But I don't think Emmanuel's given up that top spot. Not that it really matters.
I was going to say,
right?
Look,
it doesn't really matter. I mean, you can have a 1A, 1B. You had DT and Emmanuel, who was the true number one. There towards the end, it was looking like Emmanuel took over the number one spot.
Sure.
Who cares, right? I mean, like, what does it really matter?
I'm glad you said that, because here's what I'll say. In addition to me saying I believe it's Courtland Sutton time, I actually hope you're right.
Sure. I mean, I feel the same way. It's only going to help the Denver Broncos out. It's only going to help Emmanuel if people are viewing Courtland Sutton as the number one.
That's right.
And it's only going to help Courtland if people are still viewing Emmanuel as that guy.
Right.
So all it is a number. Like, okay, this guy's our top receiver. And when you have a good offense, it could go back and forth, hopefully, where, man, Emmanuel looks like it 1 week, and then this guy looks like it, Courtland looks like it the other week. I mean, there towards the end, it was Marvin. You know, when I was with the Colts, it was Marvin Harrison. I mean, he was the guy. But then Reggie Wayne started creeping up there.
Sure.
And some games it looked like Reggie. I know Broncos fans remember some of those games. And some games it looked like Marvin. I mean, you just got to put on the playoffs in, I don't know what year, pick one. And you'll see Reggie just going all over the place. But
yeah,
that's what great offenses have. They can go back and forth, and hopefully that's the case this year with these guys. Couple games, oh, Manuel's back. He's a top guy. And then Courtland, whoo, you know, this guy's going to be the number one here for a long time. So hopefully that will be the position we're in where we're debating it.
Right. And you know where they did that this past year is in Pittsburgh, where you have Antonio Brown for 1,300 yards, but also you got Juju going for over 1,400 yards. And it was just like, you know, it was a debate and maybe unhealthy in the locker room, specifically with Antonio, but the fan base could legitimately debate who's our number one receiver? Because Juju is flirting with 1,500 yards with seven touchdowns, but Antonio Brown's got 15 touchdowns. If we're debating this during the season, that means the Broncos' offense is probably better than it's been in the last four seasons.
Yeah, yeah, and that's a good thing. So hopefully that will be kind of how this thing plays out this year, where you see Courtland emerge, but you also see Emmanuel just be Emmanuel.
Sure.
And if that's what happens, then the offense will be a whole lot better.
I see a couple things I want to react to here on the RamosLaw.com text line. If you want to get tagged in and become part of the show, 303-713-1043. The first is those treadmills. This is coming from the texter. Those treadmills are very misleading. First, straight line only. Second, no pressure on joints. Third, older guy coming off Achilles. Need to see it on the field. Well, yeah.
We got it.
We're not
saying he's ready.
It's four stinking months.
I mean,
it was an encouraging sign. That's right. What we're saying. He's not ready to cut and create separation. But you could either see that on April 16th or not see that on April 16th. And we saw it, so we're encouraged.
Saw it, we're encouraged. He's moving in the right direction. Looks like everything is going well and on plan and on schedule, excuse me. And everything's moving in the right direction. That's all, really.
Yep.
Right? I mean, any moment something could happen and derail it. We understand that because right now he is not even, you know, using his own weight and jogging and running without assistance. But after 4 months of Achilles surgery, it is a great sign with what we saw him doing on the treadmill.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And then here's another one from JG. Appreciate you chiming in. But he says, damn, you guys are crowning these two wide receivers the top in the league already? Calm down, fellas. No, we're definitely not. None of us said that. But JG, what we did say is that the Broncos' offense could be dynamic if both these guys are in tip-top shape. And by the way, why not? Why not be one of the better tandems if it's a healthy Emmanuel Sanders, a dynamic, young, thoroughbred like Cortland Sutton with Joe Flacco as your quarterback?
And a good running game, hopefully.
Yeah.
With Lindsey and Royce Freeman. I mean, it should be better. And we don't know what the draft's going to look like, but I go, you know, take it a step forward. I mean, when you look at the whole receiver group, And Deshaun Hamilton, add him to the mix, and Timmy Patz. I mean, I like this group as a whole. I really do. And so those two guys have a chance and opportunity to do some really, really good things.
We doing a giveaway right now? Okay. Get your phones out. You have an opportunity to join us next week, Wednesday, April 24th, the day before the draft, 1 p.m. for our Fan War Room Draft Special. We're going to have hot, awesome barbecue catered from Brothers Barbecue. They do a tremendous job. So be the fourth caller right now to win a pair of VIP tickets and be in the same room as us as we debate all things Broncos draft.
Who's in that lineup? We got to have Evans and D-Mac.
Yes, they both will be there.
Okay.
They both will be there. So be the fourth caller now, 303-713-1043, and you'll be with us next Wednesday, just 24 hours before the draft. All right, what does Joe Flacco think about the Broncos drafting a quarterback at 10? He made it pretty freaking clear. We'll go through it next. The Broncos are back at Dove Valley, going through minicamp, voluntary minicamp. And Joe Flacco spoke yesterday for the first time, I think, since he was introduced as the Broncos quarterback. Interesting and different to see him, you know, in a Broncos jersey out there practicing. But he spoke to the media, and he was asked the question that I think a lot of us wanted to hear. And that was, what are your thoughts about the Broncos drafting a quarterback? And you're going to have to listen close, but you don't need a magnifying glass. Okay. Listen to the codes that Joe Flacco clearly lays out in front of you on his thoughts at a quarterback at 10.
I don't know. I think I had a pretty good outlook on it last year, and it is what it is. I want to get this team to be the best it is with me at the quarterback position. So obviously, that's not of most importance to draft a quarterback. But if we do, that's completely out of my control. I'm going to go out here and I'm going to compete, and he's going to have to come out here and be on the field with me every day too. So I'm all ready for that. I don't really care about whether they take a quarterback or not, whether it's 10 or whatnot. The only thing I care about is, like I said, I want this team to be as good as they can with me at quarterback. So if we feel like as a team, as an organization, we can add value to our team with a 10th pick, well, then I'm all for getting a guy that can add value to the team with me as the understood quarterback. But, hey, it is what it is, man.
Okay, I got it. Yep. It's clear. It's clear, Zach. Very, very clear.
Is not of most importance. He's going to have to be on the field with me. I don't really care. But if you think
you
he can
care.
Add, right, clearly, but if you think he can add the most value, fine. with me as the understood quarterback.
Right. So I mean,
that was awesome.
I think the way he answered the first question, and I want to take a listen to that again because I think that pretty much says all we need to know.
I don't know. I think I had a pretty good outlook on it last year, and it is what it is. I want to get this team to be the best it is with me at the quarterback position. So obviously, that's not of most importance to draft a quarterback. But if we do, that's completely out of my control. I'm going to go out here and I'm going to compete, and he's going to have to come out here and be on the field with me every day too. So I'm all ready for that. I don't really think
not of utmost importance to draft a quarterback because I want to get this team the best possible position it can be with me at quarterback and to win football games. So that's not a quarterback. Joe would be pissed if they draft a quarterback at 10.
He would be pissed.
He's trying to win football games. That quarterback's not going to help him be the best at his job. Right? He's investing a lot here. The last thing he wants is a quarterback at 10. You take a quarterback in the second round, who cares? Quarterback at 10? Huh. Pissed.
I think he's pissed off by just having to answer the question. Because the first question was framed to him, and he says, I thought I had a good outlook on it last year. The first question was framed to him like, you just had to go through this, will you have like a similar sort of outlook if you have to do it again or whatever? And you could just tell by the question, he's annoyed. He's annoyed. Like John Elway, if you're Joe, you're saying John freaking Elway, the guy drafting at 10, just told me that I'm entering my prime. And you're asking me about drafting a guy at my position? Like, I think he's offended. I really do.
And you know, imagine if it happens.
Well,
how would he feel? I think my best guess would be he wouldn't be back here.
After this year?
No.
Or never start?
I think he would not be back for the voluntary portions of all of this offseason stuff. The stuff that I said he could have done, and because he has a lot of leverage, I think if they drafted a quarterback at 10, he's like, I'm done. I mean, I'm not putting up with this mess again. You told me I was entering my prime. You told me I was your guy. You traded for me, and now you're going to put me through this mess again? I don't need it. I don't need it because I know the writing on the wall is what? I'm a rental. At best, a one-year rental. I'm not putting up with it. I'm not doing this again. It was a disaster last year for me. So this is another reason why they're not drafting the quarterback at 10.
I agree. They're not going to draft a quarterback at 10. I agree. Now, I will reserve the, a wild card of John could love one guy, and if he falls, there's this, scenario where I could see it happening, but I don't believe it will happen. I do disagree with you, though, when you said if they did, Joe would not be around for voluntary stuff. I disagree.
Really?
From that one comment of, he'll have to be on the field with me. I don't think that Joe would help his cause, and I don't think he would be under the impression that he would be helping his own cause by not being there. I think that he might give him like kind of the Ben Roethlisberger, Mason Rudolph cold shoulder of if he asks me a question about the playbook or something, I'm just going to point to the playbook. He could give him the old Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers treatment, but I do believe he would be here for every step of the way because for Joe, we got to remember, his professional life is sort of on the line. If it doesn't work here in Denver, you're no longer anyone's plan. Right now, Joe is the Broncos' plan. I think it's the last chance for Joe, and I think it's the last chance for John.
Well, what happens if he doesn't play at all? What happens if he doesn't?
What scenario?
Under what scenario? You say, I want to be traded now. I want out of here. So, yeah, this could be his last chance at, having another opportunity elsewhere. But what if you say right now, no, I want to be gone now. Deal me. Get rid of me. I want another opportunity. Y'all lied to me. I just don't think he plays good soldier if they draft somebody at 10. I just don't see that happening. I don't see him showing back up and just like, okay, you know, thanks for drafting my replacement at some point this year at 10. I thought I was your guy. I thought you would give me help at 10. And we have something, we have a good base and foundation here. Why are we not building on that and helping me out? I don't know. Everybody's different on how they would approach it, but him having no history here, you named guys that had history.
Right.
Brett Favre.
Right.
Ben Roethlisberger.
No, you're
when
right.
Did they take Mason Rudolph? Not in the first round.
Second round.
Right. So that's a big difference.
It is.
Big difference.
It is.
So Joe Flacco has no history here. He's just coming here. How would you feel? How would you feel? Like everything that's been said.
I'd be furious and feel like I was lied to.
Yeah. Right. And you just went through it last year. How'd that work out for you? A team that you played for, I don't know, what, a decade or
yeah,
so?
Yeah, a decade.
You know, you saw how it turned out. The minute they had a chance to replace you, what happened? They replaced you. Do you really want to go through that again? I know personally, okay? And Broncos, you know, country, Broncos land, take yourself out of that equation. Put yourself in Joe's situation. Okay, he's made a ton of money, so I don't want to hear about how he's going to be giving up the $18 million. I don't think that's in play here. So put yourself in his situation, what you just went through, and now you're coming to a new situation, new team. You don't have a history here, and that happens to you. I know that I would be furious, and I would be like, you want me to play at a high level, but you're not giving me all the tools necessary to play at a high level, and I'm going to have to constantly and look over my shoulder. If I don't play good for one game or two games in a row, I know I'm going to be looking over my shoulder every other game, every
sure.
other week. When am I going to
sure.
be replaced?
Sure.
What's going on here?
But again, I think there's a part of this equation that you're not really acknowledging. What other options does Joe Flacco have? When you say, oh, I'll be furious and I'm not showing up for any volunteer work and I want to be traded. Like,
I don't know. It just takes one, Zach. Just takes one. One injury. Do you think Jay Cutler was going to play a couple years ago?
No, I didn't.
They drug him out of the
booth.
Slash.
Bar.
Both of them.
Say,
where's Jay at?
Jay,
we go check the booth, we go check the bar. One
like,
of them.
Honestly, what do you do?
Jay, put that heater out.
We need you.
Put that heater out.
We need you. We just need you. Can you sprint 100 yards for us, right? Just put it out for a little bit. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my goodness.
But things happen. Teams. You know, you look at Case Keenum. Case Keenum got traded to the... You think the Redskins wouldn't want Joe Flacco?
I think they would.
Right.
I think they would.
So, I mean, there's teams out there that... And it only takes one injury, one setback to a team that thinks they are a playoff bound. All of a sudden, their starter gets hurt. Well, Joe Flacco becomes very, very valuable at that point. So, I don't know what team or what situation or what it would look like. But I'm just telling you, I don't think... You want to go down that road if you're John Elway and draft a quarterback at 10 because I could see the writing on the wall. I could see what would happen. I mean, he just went through this last year with a team that he had history with, and how did it turn out for him? Lousy.
Not
awful.
Good. Not good.
It turned out with him, a first round of the playoffs, you know, watching from the sideline when Lamar Jackson can't complete a pass.
Right.
And he's just standing there. And they're getting, you know, throttled.
Below not good.
Right. So,
but again, would John make a decision based around how Joe Flacco is going to feel? Now, again, I don't think he's going to draft a quarterback, but right. I don't think like that's part of.
No, you're right. John's going to make a decision that he thinks best for the Denver Broncos. But I don't think John wants to draft a quarterback at 10.
I don't think he got Flacco
in the first place.
Right, right.
That's why I'm telling you he's not drafting a quarterback at 10. It's back to that 1%. It's not because of all those reasons. Why go get Joe Flacco in the first place? It would tell me that you have no plan. No plan. I mean, what are we doing here? Like, Flacco's our plan. Okay, let's move forward with Flacco this year. Let's see what he looks like. It's not a quarterback at 10. Let's get a good football player and see what Flacco and this football team looks like. You draft a quarterback at 10, then that was a stupid move to go trade for Joe Flacco. You're just wasting assets to trade for Joe Flacco. You're wasting salary cap spot. You should have just kept Keenum and then, you know, drafted somebody.
You know what it kind of, for me, comes down to? Whether John actually believes what he said. Does John Elway actually believe that some of Joe Flacco's best football is ahead of him? Does John Elway believe that Joe Flacco is hitting the stride of his prime? And if he believes that, then there's no way it would fly in the face of those comments.
Right.
It would totally contradict everything he just said a month ago. But I believe my gut tells me what yours does.
But they could spin it. You know, spin it. I didn't think this guy was available. I couldn't pass on him. We had him graded very high. You know, I still believe Joe's in his prime. I mean, you could spin it a lot of different ways, but not to Joe Flacco, you couldn't.
No, not to Joe. And I'll tell you this, not to me either.
Right.
If you truly believe that you have the guy at the most important position in all of sports, and he's in his prime, and your window is to win now, it would directly contradict everything that he said.
Do you want me to move my family here and you just drafted my replacement?
Could you imagine? Could you imagine?
I thought I was going to be here. You know, if I played well, I thought I was going to be here 3-4 years. I thought I had that opportunity.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? You don't have that opportunity anymore if you draft somebody at 10. Okay? The writing's on the wall. You're going to be here for a year at the most. And who even knows then? They might decide to cut you in the training camp.
They could.
This guy starts playing well. We don't want to pay you $18 million. We're going to squeeze you, Joe. You're going to have to take a pay cut. All of these things are real possibilities if they draft somebody at 10. Joe knows it. He would be furious. He would be pissed. I know I would be. I would be. I'd be like, oh, you got to be kidding me. I'm coming all the way over there, moving my family over there. You told me all this stuff? Uh-uh. Sorry.
Anyone out there, I mean, think of wherever you are at right now, think about if you just got hired by your boss, by your new boss. He says, you're the guy for the job. And then within a 3-month period, goes out and creates the same exact position and brings in someone new. It just, you would feel slighted. But again, I don't think John is operating under the influence of Joe's feelings. I think he's operating because he actually believes what he said. I think he believes that Joe Flacco can get this thing back on track. And you want to know what? I hope he's right. I hope he's right. And you could formulate an argument very easily why he's on to something. And I'm not giving any guarantees or assurances because it could not work, Stoke. It could not work. But we got to be hopeful because what other option do we have?
This is the position you're in. When you haven't drafted a quarterback, you're in the position of grasping at these veteran free agent guys or guys that are available via trade. I mean, that's the spot you're in. And you just kind of keep your fingers crossed and hopefully they can regain the magic that Flacco had, you know, 5-6 years ago. Hopefully Keenum can build off of the year he had the year before. Didn't happen, right? We'll see with Flacco. But that's the spot you're in when you don't have a quarterback or a young quarterback. When you don't have that young quarterback, what are you going to do if you're trying to win now? If you're not in tank mode or rebuild mode, what are you going to do? You're going to go get the next best option, which is a veteran quarterback, and keep your fingers crossed that he can do it again. And then once again, we're in that position. But there's a possibility, a likelihood, possibility, whatever, however you want to put it, that it might not work out. And you're in the same position you've been the last 2 years next year.
I have to address a RamosLaw.com text because I see this sort of sentiment on a daily basis. And it's just, it is not even loosely based on reality. Come on, Stoke, say the truth. Joe Flacco is a 2-year rental, then we get Trevor Lawrence. Somehow this is an actual thing, and I don't mean to, this is not a personal message to the texter that chimed in here on the RamosLaw.com text line, because we appreciate your participation, we appreciate your listenership. But the thought that the Broncos are going to get Trevor Lawrence is a total, it's not even loosely based on reality. Trevor Lawrence is going to be the number one overall pick. you don't get a veteran quarterback, former Super Bowl MVP, to get the number one pick. You play Paxton Lynch.
Right.
You play Kevin Hogan for 16 games. Like, play someone that it just is destined to get their head kicked in. So it's just, he's going number one. And by the way, no one is going to trade out of that spot. Because the team that sucks bad enough to get the number one pick is going to have full intentions of drafting Trevor Lawrence. You couldn't offer 10 first round picks. Yeah, it's just get it out of your mind. It's not going to happen. Purge that from your thoughts. Trevor Lawrence is not an option. And I'm not sure if the other two are either, Fromm or Herbert. You're going to be bad.
Lawrence is 2 years,
right.
Tua.
It was Tua. I'm sorry, Fromm. Tua Tagovailoa and right. Jake Fromm. And
they're probably all out of the equation, especially when you look at, you know, if it's going to be Tua at one, it's going to be Lawrence at one. I mean, how are you going to get that pick? You have to be really, really bad. Or you have to have a willing partner that wants to trade, you know, people think, you know, like an next Andrew Luck. Like, who do you think the Colts were trading, you know, Andrew Luck when they got that pick? No. So if you need a quarterback, if you hadn't taken a quarterback in the first round the year before, or if you don't have a franchise quarterback on your roster, then you know what you're going to do. You're not trading that pick. You're just not doing it.
Period.
You're keeping that pick. And so usually if you stink, and you're lucky enough to get that pick and be able to draft that guy, you don't have a franchise quarterback on your team.
That's right.
You take that opportunity and you draft that guy. So the likelihood of us getting one of those guys with the way the roster is constructed is really, really slim to none. So we're going to have to find something else, another way to find that quarterback. Now, maybe you could move up, you know, this next year, if you like one of these guys and he falls to 5 and you're drafting at 10, maybe you could move up to around that spot or something like that to get, you know, a Fromm or an Hebert, Herbert. But to get like a Tua at 1, no.
It's just not realistic.
Nope.
It's just not the way that the league works. It's just not the NFL. It's not reality. We got to move on from that. And by the way, like, what makes you think that John Elway is trying to position something for 2 years down the road? It's about 2019, if you haven't figured that out.
Right.
It's about 2019. You know, the last thing he's worried about is the 2021 draft and the guy who's going to go number one overall. And Cody says on the RamosLaw.com text line, Elway's not taking a quarterback at 10. No way, no how. This is all media-driven waste of time. So I get your sentiment there. But when you say media-driven waste of time, we've seen really smart dudes, and we talked about this yesterday, smart dudes like Peter King and Todd McShay within the past 2 weeks floating the idea of John doing this. So it's not right. it's not like some comment board.
We're not just making it up. I mean, real people who do the draft and are very well connected in the NFL have the Broncos taking quarterback at 10. And I don't understand why, but these guys are pretty smart guys.
That's right. Right.
So they don't just make this stuff up. That's what they do for their livelihood. And of course, they're not always right, but there has to be a reason why they have the Broncos picking a quarterback at 10. This isn't something that we're making up.
So, and along these lines, and I do want to chat about this a little bit later. What does Joe Flacco have to do this year to justify John not going into the draft next year? What does he have to do this year to justify that he's the actual plan? I don't want to have this conversation right now. We'll have it in a little bit. I think it's a real topic of conversation that we all need to sort of think about. That, like, what do we need to see to instill enough confidence that he's the guy for 4 or 5 years? Because that could be the case. If this works, he's only 34.
Yeah, I mean, it's not crazy talk. I guarantee you John's hoping that happens. Hoping that Joe plays well enough to be here for the next 3-4 years, whatever it may be. He can continue to draft just good football players and not having to worry about trying to figure out these quarterbacks and draft a guy very high. And we all know the ramifications if you miss. So I think John would love it if Flacco played well enough for him to say, perfect.
I don't have to worry about that.
Thank you, Joe.
I don't have to stick my neck out again.
Right.
Interesting news breaking today. Florida prosecutors intend to release the Robert Kraft video.
Bobby.
I'll tell you what. If you're trying to formulate a case and you got the video and you're going to put it out there.
I think they made the prosecutors really upset by all their antics that they've been doing and everything that they've been, how they've gone about it.
Like
right?
fighting it, not right. guilty, going to build a team of lawyers.
Calling them out, saying they didn't have this warrant, that warrant, wasn't legal, this and that. And like, okay.
Zach. Told you not to.
Is there a scenario which the Broncos could trade up in this year's draft? A reputable national outlet thinks so. Details next.